I'm very pleased to be able to welcome Professor Glenn Feuerbach to the seminar today. Glenn is a very distinguished sociologist and demographer. He works on a lot of very important topics, including income inequality around the world, segregation, and methods, and so on. And his recent book is this one, Seven Rules for Social Research, which people on the sociological analysis course should know is on the reading list. So it's a really helpful book. I learned a lot from it. So if you haven't started digging into it, you should. And so Glenn is going to talk about a paper which is coming out in Demography, on a new method to determine why length of life is more unequal in some society than in others.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Wing. As he mentioned, this paper is coming out in Demography, so if you'd like a copy, feel free to email me and I can send you a PDF file. My email address is there. It's pretty simple. It's just simply fireball@pennstateuniversitypsu.edu. The other thing you'll notice on the first slide is that what I'm talking about, which is inequality in age at death. And even though that's a topic that I think more people are studying now, it's still, I think, fairly unusual. I dare say, and I haven't looked back at all the seminar speakers you've had this year or previous years, but I dare say that you haven't had probably a whole lot of people who've talked about inequality in length of life. Some people die younger than other people, even though I would argue that it's certainly one of the more fundamental or more important inequalities in human existence. So, and it's also, if you know something about my work, as Wing mentioned, most of my previous work in the area of inequality has looked at income inequality and particularly global income inequality. So I'm guessing that Wing didn't know what he was getting into when he invited me to come to talk a few months ago, and then he's probably a little bit surprised when he asked me for my topic, and I said, well, I want to talk about this. It's a new topic for me. One of the first things I want to do is to say something about how the project began. Like I said, it's a new issue for me. Why I think the issue is important, and then to talk about this new method, which, and by the way, I failed to mention that there's a co-author of this paper, Claudia Na. Claudia Na is a graduate student at Penn State. She's actually from Germany. Very good student. But I'll tell you a little bit about how this project began and then talk about this variance decomposition method which Claudia and I have developed, which I think, at least I hope, works well for the particular decomposition we're doing here. But I also think it may have some application in other areas, and that's something that we might want to talk about at the end. And then so I'll talk about, to assist your intuition about what this decomposition, I'll show you some figures, then some results for the United States versus Sweden. I'll explain why we chose the United States versus Sweden, give you the equations, and probably by that time, beginning later in the talk, and we'll go through the equations very quickly, and then I'll talk a little bit about what's next. Okay, so why is mortality more age compressed in some societies than others? And let me give you the origin of the project. Several years ago, Claudia came to my office, and she had an intuition about why variance in age at death might vary across populations. And maybe to make this more concrete, think about two populations. They could be, blacks and whites. They can be Britain and Sweden. Just think about two populations, two countries, for example. It could be that in the higher variance population, the population where there's more variance in age of death, more inequality in age of death, people die more often of causes that are concentrated among the young or among the old. See, that would spread things out, right? Particularly among the young. That's typically would be the case. Or perhaps people die of the same causes at the same rates But the within cause variance is greater in the higher variance population. So again, you have two countries where people, Britain and Sweden, let's say. Let's suppose in Britain and Sweden, people die of the same causes. They die of those same causes at the same rates. But in Britain, which does have more variance in age of death than Sweden, that within those causes, the distribution has greater variance. Right? That's a possibility. Or a third possibility is perhaps people die of the same causes at the same rates with the same within cause variance. But these, think about these age distributions at death within each cause. Maybe that those distributions are more spread out. In other words, the means are different. Okay, the distributions are the same. The variance of those distributions is the same, but the means are different. So actually, that in my office that day, that was her intuition. We sketched these things out. It looks something like this, and I hope you can see it. But the y-axis is deaths. We've got nation A and nation B, two populations, okay? And we're going to have something we're going to call spread effect, an allocation effect, and a timing effect. And these are pure effects. And again, just to make it real simple, let's just suppose in every case, nation A has more inequality than nation B. In every case, but for different reasons. Okay? In this first situation, and to make it real simple, let's suppose people die of one of four causes. There's only four causes. This is stylized, okay, to help assist our intuition here. There's only four causes of death. Okay, and in these two countries, nation A and nation B, people die of the same four causes. All right? Well, in this first situation, you have people dying of the same four causes. One-fourth of everyone in nation A dies of this cause. One-fourth die of this cause, and so forth in nation B. But in the case of nation A, you are susceptible to die of this cause over a larger age span than in nation B. So we call that a spread effect. Okay? So that's a within variance, within cause variance. Okay? There can also be something we call an allocation effect. And this is a little bit harder to see, perhaps. But you'll notice it's the same four causes. And in this case, the variance is the same. So it's not a spread effect. But you have in nation A more people dying of this cause or this cause, which are causes that are either predominantly, disproportionately affect the old or the young. Okay? We call that an allocation effect. Or there's this third situation, which we call a timing effect, in which, again, you've got the within cause variance. Maybe it's a little bit hard to see, but these distributions are all coincident. The variance is the same, okay? And the allocation is the same. One-fourth of everyone in both countries dies of each of those four causes. But these distributions overlap more in nation B. The means are closer together. So we call that a timing effect, okay? That people in nation B, in terms of when they die on average, if you die of this particular cause, this particular cause is different than the average age at which people die of that particular cause in nation A. So we have, and this would probably be more recognizable in America, where we have something called the SAT test, which students take in order to get into college. We call this the SAT method of decomposition. Spread, allocation, and timing. Well, so we almost literally drew this on a napkin. I actually, in my office, have a blackboard, so we came up with those figures. But I had three concerns. My initial concerns, first of all, could we actually, okay, it seemed to make sense intuitively, we could draw these pictures, could we actually come up with the equations to actually decompose the variance this way? You know, it made sense, but could we, you know, you never know until you do it. All right? Then, assuming we could come up with these decomposition equations, there's the question of, okay, so how useful are the results? I mean, the utility of a tool is proven in its use, right? So we might come up with this new hammer, this new tool, but how useful? Would it be useful? And in particular, I mean, the whole idea of decomposition is to come up with unique components, clean components. And, if you did a decomposition and everything was just joint, you haven't really learned much. So how can you really cleanly partition these things using this method? And then the third, and this is because this is not an area I knew a whole lot about, is, are we reinventing the wheel? You know, has somebody else? You know, I'm always, you know, was fearful that I'd give a talk on this and somebody would raise their hand and say, well, you know, Nathan Keep, it's back in 1969 paper and such, you know, showed this. So far, nobody's done that. So, you know, if you want to disabuse me of the fact that this is new, talk to me afterwards, you know. All right. So in reverse order of concerns, well, so far, you know, this paper has been accepted. This particular application of this method has been accepted by demography. And, you know, all the reviewers said, well, this looks new to them. And presumably, these are reviewers that know something about it. In terms of utility results, well, we now have results, which I'll be giving you today, for the U.S. versus Sweden. So you can decide for yourself just how useful this new information is using this decomposition method. And then, in terms of this part, going from the intuition to the equation, I think I will very quickly just show you what the decomposition equations look like. And maybe after in the Q&A part, if you want to, you know, I've got some, I actually have them on slides. I can show you exactly how we derive those equations. But sometimes I find that people's eyes sort of glaze over when you start getting the equations. So I'll probably go through those pretty quickly. All right, so why is the issue important? Well, maybe I'm preaching to the choir here, but I think it could be argued that length of inequality and length of life is perhaps the most fundamental inequality that exists in human population. And I find it very interesting. And Wing and I were talking a little bit of American politics last night. But I find it very interesting that it's the only type of inequality other than, I guess, legal inequality, where you're supposed to be equal, you know, under the law. Aside from that, it's the only type of inequality that's explicitly targeted in the U.S. for reduction. Okay? Despite, you know, I'm sure most of you realize that in America, as I think in Britain, income inequality has been rising over the last three or four decades. And it continues to rise in the U.S. More recently, there's a lot of evidence that continues to rise in the U.S. largely because of the super rich, the, you know, top one-tenth of 1%. And yet, people don't want to even raise the taxes of millionaires in America. I mean, that's, you know, if you mention that, class warfare. So rising inequality is not part of official U.S. policy. Now, explicitly, now implicitly, I mean, we do have progressive income tax and so forth, so implicitly there is some redistribution, but explicitly, to my knowledge, there's no U.S. policy which says one of our goals this year is to reduce income inequality. Same way with wealth inequality. We have rising wealth inequality, but we don't want an inheritance tax. Okay? The inheritance tax in the U.S. is an unpopular idea, certainly in a lot of quarters. By contrast, though, there's something, a policy statement, which is actually written during the Clinton years, called Healthy America 2000 in the late 1990s by the Clinton administration, but the Bush administration actually went along with it. That Healthy America, we had two major goals in our health delivery system from 2000 to 2010. The first major goal was to increase the span of healthy life. The second major goal, explicit policy goal of the U.S. government, was to eliminate health disparities, particularly eliminate health disparities across race and ethnic groups, and particularly eliminate disparities in mortality. Okay? Well, why compare the United States and Sweden? Well, even among rich countries, we don't have a good understanding of country differences in inequality and length of life. And it turns out that there's a paper by Edwards and Tolza-Perker who found in their study of adult age at death distribution, so that's what I'm going to talk about. I've taken out child and infant mortality because that's kind of a different different sort of causes there. But in terms of adult mortality, which is what I'm looking at, that they found stark differences in the variance in these distributions. Differences, you'd say, well, that must be because of differences in income inequality or educational inequality or whatever. The correlation is practically zero. As a result, the sources of differential variability in age of death within these low mortality countries, quoting them, remain unclear and await further research. And thus, our comparison, the U.S., where we have relatively high variability in age of death, with Sweden, and the reason we select Sweden is because it has the lowest variability an age of death. Okay? And here we have age in years, number of life table deaths. This is the U.S. This is Sweden. You'll notice, of course, there's a lot of heaping or clumping in the 80s and early 90s. Okay, this, and you'll notice that there is more variance. Just, you know, looking at it, you can see there's more variance. Most of the additional variance for the U.S. is down here, but there's even, interestingly, some up here. That once you get to be 100, you may live a little longer in America than you do in Sweden, believe it or not. But most of it's down here. You'll notice starting, you know, maybe in the mid-30s to about age 75 or so, that you're more likely to die in the U.S. than you are in Sweden. So that's where most of that variance is coming from. Okay? Don't ask me why there's that. You know, both countries have that strange sort of peak there. You know, you want to avoid that year, I guess, if you can help. All right, so here we have it. The mean age at death for the U.S. This is 2006. This is the most recent data we had. I think 2007 life tables are out now. But for when we did the analysis, 2006. In Sweden, life expectancy is 81 years approximately. The standard deviation for the U.S. in 2006 was 15.4. In Sweden, it's about 12.7. So you see there is a non-trivial difference. There really is a non-trivial difference there. I don't have, the reason these are approximates because I don't, you know, we actually calculated these ourselves based on life tables. This is just based on what we could find in the literature. And what we found is Britain, the standard deviation is about 13.5. This is in 2000. So you see, actually, Britain's a lot closer to Sweden than the U.S. is, interestingly. And Britain, according to these data, is actually less inequality in age at death than Japan, although they're very close. Denmark's 13.7, Canada's 13.8, which is one of the things we'd like to do sometimes, compare the U.S. to Canada, because we're very similar countries in a lot of ways. But we have a different healthcare system. Yes?
Is this a mean of both men and women?
Yes. Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah, this is both, mean of both men and women. That's right. So later, when we get to decomposition, we split out men and women, but this is everybody together. And then France is about 14.7. So the U.S. is kind of an outlier on the high end, and so we took two extremes, the U.S. and Sweden. All right, so here we go, again, just to remind you, here's a spread effect. So the greater spread of cost-specific age distributions, everything else being equal, and in this case, Nation A has greater variance than Nation B. So we've already, whoops, what did I do? There we go. And then the allocation effect, timing effect. So we all remember that, right? So results. So decomposing the differences in variance in age at death, U.S. versus Sweden, 2006. All right, here's the table. There's a lot of numbers in this table. We're not going to go through every number. These are percentages. Remember that they are all percentages, so at one point, they all add up to 100. And let me sort of walk you through the table. All right? This column here, first of all, we have 15 causes of death. All right? And the most common cause of death, of course, in the U.S. and Sweden is heart disease, which accounts for about 28%. So this is a percentage. So these percentages right here add up to 100. Cancer accounts for about 22%. So I see some of you writing notes. I do have a few copies of this table. You know, if you want a copy later, I'll give it to you. And also, like I say, you can always write me for the paper and get the whole thing. So you see, roughly half the deaths in the U.S. are due to two causes. So these are rank ordered according to how prevalent they are. Now, this third cause, NEC, stands for not elsewhere classified. You can imagine if we put in all causes of death, what this table would look like. I mean, it's unwieldy. It would be even more unwieldy than it is. All right. So there are a lot of minor causes of death that you can't classify in any of these other categories, and so we sort of put them all together. But I must say that there are a few causes that we thought, in terms of the substantive issue we're looking at, which is the U.S. versus Sweden, there are a few causes we thought could be, even though they're fairly infrequent, relatively infrequent, we thought they could have a big impact on the difference in the variance in age at death. Okay. And so, for example, traffic deaths. 1.2% of deaths in the U.S. are due to traffic accidents. See that? Where is it? Yeah, 1.2%. But it accounts for almost 16% of the difference in the variance in age at death. Okay, so we pulled out a few that for theoretical reasons we thought might have a lot to do with the difference in the variances. Another one that's pretty obvious is homicides. And, you know, even though, quote, only one out of every 250 deaths in the U.S. is due to homicide, only one out of 200. So it's a relatively, it's a rare cause for death. But it accounts for almost 11% of the difference in the variance. And again, if you think about it, it's because most homicides disproportionately affect the young. And same way with traffic accidents. Okay, so we did pull out a few causes which are fairly minor causes, but we thought would have a lot to do with this inequality in age at death. All right? But the NEC is just kind of this residual category. Then cerebrovascular, lower respiratory, and so forth. All right, so we got these 15 causes of death, and they add up to 100%. And then one of the first things you notice, here is the contribution of that, the overall contribution of that particular cause of death to the difference. Now remember, we're looking at the difference in two variances, to the difference in the two variances. Okay? And you'll notice, you see immediately that the difference in the difference in inequality in age of death for Sweden versus the U.S., it's not due to cancer. In fact, that negative sign, I mean, that's essentially zero. But it's basically saying that if the mortality regimes for the U.S. and Sweden were otherwise the same, except for cancer, that given the mortality regime for cancer in the U.S., actually there'd be a little less variance in the U.S. than in Sweden. That's what the negative sign means there. All right. So it's not due to cancer. So if you're trying to reduce the variability in age of death of the U.S. relative to Sweden, you don't focus on cancer. And even heart disease doesn't quite contribute its, quote, share. You know, it's 28% of the total deaths, but it only accounts for 23% of the difference in the variance. So in fact, if you look at these top three causes, which account for 70% of the deaths in the U.S., where NEC is just counted as one cause, it accounts for less than 40% of the difference in inequality in age of death. So if there are some causes which are, quote, under-contributing, there must be causes which are over-contributing, right? And so that's what you see. So you look for them. And so down here, which causes are over-contributing? Well, I've already mentioned one of them, traffic accidents. 1.2% of deaths in the U.S., but about 16% of the, accounts for about 16% of the variance. I mean, these things make some sense, I think. Homicides. Less than 0.5% of deaths, but about 11% of the difference in the variance. Is everybody with me so far? All right. So I just said all this. So the leading causes of death are not always the main contributors to U.S.-Swedish difference in inequality. Another observation, basic observation, is that it's not due to men. It's not due to women. That men and women contribute about equally, about what you would expect. So it's not comparing Swedish men to American men and Swedish women to American women. Whatever these causes are that are leading to this greater inequality in age of death in the United States, they're sex neutral. Okay. Now, there are particular causes that are, we'll see in a minute, but in terms of the overall or net result, It's not a gender story here. It's not a sex story here. All right. So you see, it's about 50%. It's close to 50%. All right. Now these results, the ones I've talked about so far, you actually could have done without doing any sort of SAT decomposition. I mean, I've just so far just focused on this part of the table, and you could have. I don't remember seeing this very often, but you could actually do something like this. I think just using, you know, if you have cause of death, you could figure out a way to decompose this. But in our method, we take this and we decompose it then, this number, into spread effect, allocation effect, and timing effect. And then it doesn't quite add up sometimes. There is kind of a joint effect, an effect that can't be uniquely assigned to one of the other three, to S, A, or T. And so you have this joint effect over here. And you like that to be small, of course, because you like a clean partitioning. All right? So these results could have been obtained from existing cost-specific decompositions, and then so the question is, what does the SAT method add? Well, again, the keys to reading the table, first, remember that these are percentages. You read within the rows, so you go across the columns within the rows to get the contribution of a particular cause, the total contribution of that cause, which you split up into a spread effect, allocation effect, timing effect, and then if there's a joint effect. And then the column sums, summing go down, which is summing over the causes, then give you the total contribution to spread, the contributions of spread summed up over all the causes, allocation effects, the total allocation effect, and the total timing effect. So what do we find? Well, we've got, here's the gross contribution, and we've got it by male and female. So in heart disease, actually, females contribute more than males in the case of heart disease, and so forth. I mean, if you have the numbers, there's a lot of stories you could tell in this table. And we've got spread, so we want to take that 23% total and split it up into spread effect, allocation effect, timing effect, and then this joint effect. And you can do it separately for men and women if you'd like. All right. Down here you see if you add up all the spread effects, 25% for heart disease, cancer, 6%. Remember, cancer, the gross effect or net effect of cancer is basically zero, so there must be something counteracting that. And so on. It turns out that about two-thirds of the difference in inequality is variance within causes, spread effects, about two-thirds of spread effects. All right? So for whatever reason, in the U.S., for most causes of death, we're more vulnerable over a larger age span than they are in Sweden. Allocation effects count for about a fifth. And that's mainly, you know, if you look at it, that's mainly due to traffic accidents and homicides. Timing effects are generally small. That when we die of things in the U.S., we die at about the same average age as they do in Sweden. It's, you know, 13%. And then what's nice is the joint effect, the overall joint effect is about 1%, which is good. That's saying that, you know, we have, it looks like the partitioning's fairly clean here. Okay, so we can look at specific causes, and again, if you're interested in the tables, I've got a few copies. In the case of heart disease, the spread effects alone for heart disease, just the spread effects account for about one-fourth of the difference in the variance. Traffic, I think we already talked about this a little bit. Allocation effects, as you'd expect, it's not so much that when you die of a traffic accident in the U.S., you die at a different average age than you do in Sweden. It's just that there are a lot more traffic accidents. Of course, the U.S. is a bigger country, and we travel a lot more. But you see, and then it's mainly males more than females who die of traffic accidents and contribute to this difference. Homicides, again, males more than females. So that's mainly, the allocation effects are largely traffic accidents and homicides, as you might expect. Okay, so the beauty of this method is that it quantifies the cause-specific contributions of spread, incidence, and timing of death to population differences in the age compression of mortality. And so that should give us greater understanding. You know, I'm not saying these are causes, but I'm saying it helps us to narrow down, you know, what we need to look at in terms of policy inputs that might be most useful for reducing inequality in individual lifespans. So where do all these numbers come from? How much time do I have, Wing?
Another 15 minutes.
Another 15 minutes? Okay. So where do all these numbers come from? Well, let me just sort of give you the beginning and the end, and then all the stuff in the middle we'll skip for now, and if you're interested, you can ask me about it. So let's start off with, remember we're talking about, we want to decompose a difference in variance. So it starts out very innocently. You've seen these things before. Sigma squared for population A, variance for population A, minus variance for population B. Again, these can be countries or whatever, two populations. And that is equal, and hopefully, you know, if you had, I don't know, do you teach statistics, Wing? If you had a course from, hopefully if you had a course in statistics, you know what a variance looks like. All right, so there's the variance. And it's simply for each death for person I in population A minus the average death for everybody, average age of death, these are age of death. Average age of death for everybody in population A squared, that difference squared, and you sum that over all individuals divided by the number of individuals. Is everybody with me? And of course for B. All right, so it's just this. So it starts simple enough. We're just going to decompose this into this spread allocation and timing thing. Okay, and because life table deaths are used, NA equals NB equals, you know, usually 100,000, N. So just for convenience, we're just going to basically take N out of there. And we're going to decompose. This is usually called sum of squares or a variation. So we're going to decompose a variation or sum of squares. And then at the end, we're going to stick N back in. Just because, I mean, we could do it with N in there, but it's messy enough without the N. So we're just taking N out, and then we're going to stick it back in at the end. Okay, and so we sort of decompose it by cause. That's what that's all about. And we sort of go through the thing. And we go through the thing. We go through the thing a little more. And we know there's got to be spread allocation timing and joint effects in there somewhere. We got to figure out what they are. And then we go through it again. And here's what we come up with. All right. So that's the equation we use. And by the way, I think I'm going to talk about this later, but there's a program that will do this for you. Claudia has written the program. You know, I'm at the point in my career where I don't do much programming anymore. I mean, that's what graduate students are for, right? So you know, she's got this program in R that, you know, if you've got the life table deaths by for the groups you want and then by, you know, age and cause, then, you know, and then you got to set the thing up. But, you know, once you got that, you got this magic thing you stick it in and it spits out all these numbers. All right. So it turns out, well, I mean, look at this. We're using B as the reference group. And it turns out that if we had used A as the reference group, the results would be the same except that joint effect thing. You know, that it's a joint effect that sort of, so you can actually figure out from the joint effect what the results would look like had you used a different. You know, anytime you do something like this, it depends on what reference group you use. So that's another reason you want your joint effect to be small, because that's telling you that it doesn't make much difference whether we use Sweden. In our case, we use Sweden as a reference group. So the positive numbers indicate that the U.S. is bigger than Sweden in the variance inequality. Have we used America as a reference group? You just have to put the joint effect in the right place, you know, and you get the results there. So small joint effects tell you that it doesn't make a whole lot of difference which group you use as a reference group. All right. So look at this. This is the this would be the variance in age of death for those who die of cause C in population A, minus the variance in age of death for people in population B who die of cause C. Remember, we got C equals 1 to 15 different causes, right? And then we've got that difference in the variance for a particular cause weighted by the number of deaths due to cause C in population B. So that's C. We're standardizing based on group B. If we were standardizing based on group A, it would be there'd be an A there, and you know, this would be a different sign. Okay, but so that, what does that sound like? Well, that sounds like a spread effect. That's what it is. It's a spread effect, right? It's a difference in, you know, going back to that figure, remember the top part where things are more spread out? So that's a spread effect. What does this sound like? Well, here's a variance here, which I won't get into. But you're weighting it by the difference in the number of deaths due to cause C in A, population A versus population B. So that's an allocation effect. And then this is actually, this thing right here has to do with the difference for cause C in the average age of death for victims of cause C minus the average age of death for everybody in population A. That difference would be the same for every individual who dies of cause C. And that difference in population A, this is the same thing, that difference in population B, weighted by the number of deaths due to cause C. That's your timing effect. Remember, because that has to do with the difference in the means. You with me? Okay. And then this is the term that's left over, which you hope is small. Okay. So the first, and then you divide this. These are sums of squares. So you divide this by n. And that's how you get the percentages of the proportions. Okay. So the first term is a spread effect, second term allocation, third term is the timing. And to get this as a total, I guess I said all that, didn't I? So what have we done? Well, we pulled apart the SAT and joint components of the contribution of cause C to the group differences in lifespan variance. To get these variances as proportions, we simply divide and so forth. And so that's where those numbers come from. Right? And again, the computer program will do a lot for you. So what are the limitations? Well, the first one, already mentioned, our program shouldn't be an issue because we've got it. We, Claudia, has written a program. If the joint effects are big, you know, and this is always a problem with algebraic decompositions like that, if joint effects are big, you haven't really partitioned cleanly, you haven't learned so much. So one problem would be if you do something like this and it's all sort of joint effects, you haven't really learned a whole lot. So that's one problem. And it's our speculation, you know, and again, this is new stuff, so we haven't really applied this to a lot of different populations. But it's our speculation that if the difference in variance is very small, remember Britain versus Japan, remember the standard deviation is pretty close. You're going to get effects, but you have to remember you're decomposing very small differences. And so you might say, wow, this is 75% due to this, but it's 75% of a small number. And I guess one of our fears in people using this program is they'll sort of get bent out of shape or overinterpret, you know, sort of big numbers they get based on small differences. And I guess the other thing is that, you know, when you've got these small differences, it seems like maybe measurement error, because there's always, you know, what one country might code as heart disease, another country might code as something else. So you sort of worry about that. So I'm not sure that this method is really great for comparing two populations, particularly across countries, where the differences are really pretty small. And on the other extreme, if the countries are very different, you know, if you wanted to compare Britain to Niger, for example, I'm not sure, you know, because the cause of death in Niger are quite different than so I. And maybe you get really interesting results. I don't know, but we're skeptical. Another issue, of course, is the classification of cause groups, and this is where, in terms of the labor-intensive nature of doing a project like this, is figuring this out. You need to have cause groups which are ideologically reasonable and are comparable across the populations you're looking at, in this case, comparable across countries. And also, if you're doing a longitudinal comparison, the International Classification of Diseases, ICD, changed the categories in 1979 and 1999. I mean, it's similar. A lot of you, I guess, are in Strat, you know, about these the classifications of occupations, you know, which gets changed every once in a while and cause everybody headaches. And so you have to have some kind of bridge coding to go from the classification that was used before 1979 to the classification which was used after 1979. In the same way, in 1999, you have to use some kind of bridge coding. All right? And then you want cause groups which aren't too crude. You know, the NEC, remember, not how else we're classified, was almost 20%. So you'd like to beat that down a little bit more if you could. But on the other hand, you can't have classifications that are too fine, like I talked about, because then you'd have these unwieldy tables. All right. So this isn't just a problem that we face, but all cause-specific decompositions face this problem. And I'd say it's similar to classification of occupations. Often you want something that's, you know, that's, you don't want something that's too broad, but you don't want something that's too narrow either. So what's next? Well, more decompositions. But you need a comparison group, as Sweden is for the U.S. One could do more cross-sectional comparisons. You could do Britain versus the U.S. or Britain versus Sweden or the U.S. versus Canada, which I think is something we'd like to do down the road sometime. You can add columns. You know, we showed how you can use gender. You could put race in there as long as you've got life tables for race or ethnicity for both populations. We couldn't do that in Sweden because Sweden doesn't have enough people of African origin for the life table. You could add the role of immigrants, education groups, etc. You can do a longitudinal. You compare the U.S. with itself as a previous point in time, or Britain with itself at a previous point in time, to account for the age compression of mortality, because in most low mortality countries, there has been an age compression in mortality, and you could get a better idea of why that is. But it does require life tables for the subpopulations at different points in time. So then your ideas, and before we get to your ideas, let me just tell you what Claudia and I have on the docket to do next. And that is, this is the standard deviation in age at death for adults in the U.S. starting in 1970. And you see it kind of went down during the 70s and mid-80s, and then it kind of went up a little bit. And then it sort of went down pretty rapidly there in the mid-1990s to about 2000, and then recently it's been tracking back up again. And that's kind of a strange pattern. And so we'd like to decompose that to try to get a better idea of what's going on. So we want to know why, overall, though, it seems like there's kind of an overall downward trend. So we want to know, why has adult mortality become more age-compressed over time in the U.S., although erratically? Why has this decline been so erratic? And note, when using these endpoints, I don't show you before that, but before that, there's kind of a 1970s kind of a peak. So we start in 1970 where there's this decline. We have to worry about bridge coding because we're covering the period 1979 and 1999. So we have to figure out the bridge codes for how to go from the classification cause of the death in 1979 to 1980. All right? And then here's what's kind of even more makes it a little more intriguing is this is men and this is women. And the decline for women, at least compared to men, has been fairly steady. Even though there's been a little bit of an uptick lately, but for the most, certainly not monotonic, but for the most part, for women, the variance or inequality in age of death has been going down a lot more steadily. The decline's been a lot steadier than has been for men. Look at what's done for men. So why is length of life, first of all, why is length of life more unequal for men than women? So we just look at it at particular points in time. But also, why is the decline in inequality more erratic for men than women? And then what role, if any, does race play in these sex differences at a particular point in time and in the unevenness of its decline? So that's the next project for us. Okay, so thank you.
Thanks for your paper. I think it's a wonderful method. So it looks really exciting. We've got a couple of questions scribbled down. Let's see if I can decode them.
So you're not going to tell me Nathan Keep has already discovered this?
No, I think this is really key. Yeah. What I like about it is you wonder why is it new, because in a way it looks very intuitive and straightforward and simple. So I guess it probably means that it's a really good idea. One question I had is if you go to the last slide you sort of showed of why is the inequality in the US, why is there age compression? And part of it is simply increasing life expectancy. I guess if you plot life expectancy for women, it would definitely be very much the same, and for men it would be a little bit different, but also very close.
So you're bumping up against the ceiling, you're saying.
And that is because what you see if you plot life expectancy and inequality, whether it's S10 or any other dispersion measure, you get an extremely high correlation. And I think that is because on the right hand side of the distribution, it is difficult to push it further.
Right.
It's not as with income you have.
Right.
And I think that means that when some of these comparisons also between Sweden and the U.S. Would be even more useful if you did them at the same level of life expectancy. So what you then cancel out is that the difference you find in, for instance, S10 is a function of this relationship between life expectancy and the dispersion. And there still is a lot of variation. So you pick 2006, but there's 3 years of difference in the life expectancies. So I think it would be even more interesting to see what happens when you choose a year between the U.S. and Sweden. Yeah.
The reason I'm smiling, if I can interrupt you then, were you one of the reviewers for demography of this paper?
No.
Oh, okay. Because that's what one of the reviewers said. And it drove us crazy. Because we had to go back to Sweden, and I'm trying to remember, I don't have the slides, unfortunately. Can't we get it? And so if you write for the paper, it's in the paper.
Okay.
And I think we had to go back to 1992.
Yeah.
Which means we had, in order to get the life expectancies the same. And interestingly, the results were surprisingly similar.
Okay.
And there were some differences, but just off the top of my head, I can't remember. I think maybe allocation effects were a little bit, I don't remember for sure. But we did that. So one of the reviewers, so, you know, smart people must think alike or something, because one of the reviewers said... It could be. So anyway, we have that.
It's not
Not as different as you might expect. Now, we had to, with the bridge coding situation, remember we have 15 cause categories. We had to collapse it down to about 8 or 9. So we lost some detail there. We just couldn't, when you're doing the bridge coding, you first start off with, here's just what the rates are. And then you come to that year where it changed. They changed the definitions. And then you got a situation, here are the rates, and then suddenly the rates plummet, where they jump way up, and you think, well, that couldn't be. Cancer's doing this, and then suddenly it's doing this. No, that couldn't be. It must be the way they're classifying cancer. So there were some causes that kind of had those jumps, and we couldn't, so we had to just kind of put them together. But, the main things, cancer we're able to pull out, heart disease we're able to pull out, the main things we're able to pull out. And the results really were surprisingly, it surprised us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, I think, relevant for when you look at the within the view of time. I think that's very interesting to do, but then
right.
It's reassuring to know that at least for that.
Right. Right. Well, I'm really intrigued to figure out, because it's true that men are farther away from that ceiling than women, but still, why is it so wild for men? Versus women, and there's a little bit of you can kind of see some similar patterns. They're certainly correlated, but it just seems like men are going on a much wilder ride than women are. Yeah. So we haven't done that yet, but that's the next thing we want to do. Yeah. Did you have another question? Or?
Go ahead. Yeah.
One of the limitations you said. Big numbers, because you're always getting 100%, but maybe in reverse, you've got these small
differences, yeah.
I think that's something that everyone in this field struggles with, when you get to the life expectancies of something like this, on average, that the differences become so small. Have you thought of expressing it in other metric, a more intuitive metric, for instance, premature or early deaths, because that's actually where you showed in the two distributions most of the difference is, right?
Right.
And so one way would maybe be to express the difference in additional premature deaths for something, which has
right.
It's not 100% correct because it's not only them driving it, but maybe that's a number that people can relate to and think whether that's big or not.
Yeah. Well, to answer your question, we hadn't thought about that. But it's like there's so many ideas we have. It's kind of hard to, that sounds like something we might want to do down the road. It's something we haven't discussed. There's all kinds of things. There's other countries, like I say, we want to compare the U.S. to Canada. We want to compare the U.S. to itself over time. One of the points you brought up, I can get back to it, so I think it's pretty interesting. Any of these tables will do it. But, you know, there's this issue of once you're dead, you're dead. So if you died of homicide at an early age, you're not going to die of heart disease later. And so there's all these competing risk sort of ideas. And these results even come out sort of intuitively the way you'd expect in that case, because if you look at allocation effects, you look over here and traffic accidents and homicides, which disproportionately kill the young, then you'd expect, since these people died of, you know, this male died of homicides at age 25, he's not eligible to die of cancer later, you'd expect to see negative effects up here with positive effects down here, and you do. So even that sort of thorny, you know, we still haven't solved in some ultimate sense the competing, but it's like the results do come out kind of the way you'd expect.
Can I ask you to explain a little bit the difference between allocation effect and the gross contribution by cause? So I, intuitively, spread effect and timing effects make sense to me. So spread is just, you know, for a particular cause in country A compared with country B, is it the risk more spread out throughout the life course?
Right.
Timing is, let's say, homicide, death by homicide. Is it more concentrated in one country compared with others? You know, are these causes more bunched together?
That's right. Are the means closer together?
Yeah.
Yes.
So allocation effect, if I remember your illustrated diagram, you have four bell-shaped curves. And
I can go back to it.
Yeah.
Back here somewhere.
Somewhere, yeah. There we go.
Oh, get in.
So for the first core, first and the fourth cause, the position and the spread is the same. But in country B, for the second and the third cause, it looks like, you know, it's more prevalent.
Yes.
You know, cause two and three are more important in the grand scheme of things. In death in country B compared with country A.
That's right, and they happen to be causes that are closer to the average age.
Right.
Yes.
But how is it? So I was, when I first listened to you, so I thought, well, it sounds like, you know, gross contribution to death by particular causes. So as you point out, in America, you know, homicide contribute more to the variance in age of death in America than in Sweden. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to figure out in my head, how do I think of allocation effect as different from the gross contribution of cause-specific death to the overall variance?
Well,
does
I mean,
that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you add up,
yeah,
and get back down to any of these, if you add up the spread allocation and timing, that gives you the gross, or the plus the
joint. Yeah.
Right. So you add this plus this plus this plus this, and that gives you the 23. So it's everything involved with that cause.
Right.
There's a difference in the mortality regimes between the U.S. and Sweden with respect to heart disease, and you know, whether it's variance within the cause or variance in the a number of people who die of that cause, or whether it's the average age at which people who die of that cause happen to die. Those things added together, that's what we mean by gross effect. I don't know if that...
Let me put it this way,
okay,
and see if it really makes sense. I'm just thinking of the sort of policy thing you want to say given your SAT decomposition. So you might want to say that, you know, let's say compared with Sweden, in America, homicide contribute a lot more to variance of death or traffic accidents. So something we can do about reducing homicide or make our transport safer to make that allocation effect smaller.
Right.
Yeah, so this is, or you think about heart disease, maybe our diet is problematic.
Right.
Cancer is too high, maybe the cancer treatment or detection provision is not good enough. So that's fine. So that this technology approach allows us to pinpoint where in America the death is, you know, something you can work on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking, you know, for timing also, you know, sort of maybe there are too many young deaths. You know, then again, this is something you want to say about. But spread effect, the policy implication is a little bit ambiguous to me. So if spread effect is bigger in America for a course compared with Sweden, mm-hmm. it means that for that course, it's more uncertain at a particular age.
Right.
Whether you die of that course, you know, at that age. Whereas if the spread effect is smaller, it means it's more bunched together. So is this something good thing or bad thing that a particular course is more spread or more bunched together? I can think of argument both ways. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, a couple of things I could say.
Yeah.
One is that, and this sort of backs away in sort of the bigger picture here, you know, one of the things that that doctors in America don't like to hear is, well, you know, we have a lower life expectancy, and this isn't life expectancy, but it's variance. We have greater inequality in age of death because of the health care delivery system. Well, this says, well, it's more to it than that. I mean, there's traffic accidents and homicides. So it's and there's these external causes of death. Okay? So aside from any kind of differences in the healthcare delivery system, so that's one response in terms of policy. The other thing I would say is that if you do pinpoint something like there's greater variance in age at death for heart disease in the United States, then you could sort of focus in on heart disease and try to figure out where that variance is. And if I can flip through all these. I think I've got, yeah. I mean, you could take whatever this cause is, and this is causes, other external causes. And I wish Claudia were here because she's the one doing the coding and she could give you a little more detail. But other external causes are mainly suicides, accidents, and accidents other than traffic accidents, because remember we pulled out traffic accidents, such as falls. And you see the pattern is very different for Swedish males than it is for U.S. males. So you could, and this is kind of an extreme case where the pattern really is very different. You could take something like heart disease. It seems like, once you've sort of pinpointed this is important, it seems like, I hope I'm answering your question, you could look at the distribution in a case like that and try to figure out what's going on. I think Claudia's not here to tell me, but she has an explanation for why. So I think, you know, it's like it does at least help you sort of pinpoint where the differences are and where you might be able to, you know, look a little further to try to figure out.
So I'll let other people ask questions first. Is Michael?
Sure. Yeah, I guess I have a question that follows on from there. Why is variation a policy target? They want to reduce variation. Maybe we should increase variation so we have more chance of living longer. I mean, I can see why we want to increase mortality, but why would we want to reduce the variation of mortality?
Well, in terms of why it's a policy in the United States, is because the concerns about disparities among racial and ethnic groups.
Life expectancy is different from variation. Right?
That's right. That's right.
I can see why we want to reduce. African Americans live 5 years shorter than whites.
Right.
We say we want to reduce that terrible inequality.
Right.
Like African Americans
right.
live longer.
That's the inequality in the means. That's right.
Yeah,
that's
like,
right.
It's, again, a variation. I mean, it's like, just like people like buying lottery tickets. I mean, people
right.
risk lottery. Maybe we should, you know, have more of a chance. Okay, maybe I'll die young, but I also live to be 100, so...
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I don't have a real good answer for it. You know, it's like, okay, sort of philosophically, would you rather sort of from the age 60 to age however long you live, would you rather have kind of an even chance of dying in every year, or would you rather know that at age 83 you're going to die? That almost seems like a philosophical...
Well, I suppose one response might be for pension planning. It's better to look at it. And the other thing is, you have a...
For pension planning, that's right. You know how to spread your... Yeah.
And also, quality of life, presumably, is different. That's another reason why you might prefer to die at 80 rather than have a risk of dying at 60.
But I think just even viscerally, people kind of think that, I don't know, maybe people sort of think, well, it's kind of unfair that some people die at 40 and some people die at 100. I think maybe there's a little bit of, although you say, well, then, you know, that just, life is unfair. But... I don't have any better answer than that.
The change over time, the prevalence of different causes.
Yeah, that's what the allocation does in the sense that, you know, it's not telling you, you know, it's telling you there's homicides is important.
Right.
It's not telling you whether it's of homicides that are in committing and being committed in New York City or, you know, in rural areas, if that's what you're... But at least tells you kind of where to look. You say, well, homicides have something to do with it, so let's kind of see where they're...
Right.
So if that's what you're asking.
But I mean, over time, like in the 80s, 90s,
sure.
The spike of crime.
Sure, sure. I mean, you would that should show up. I mean, we haven't done that yet, see? We've only done the U.S. versus Sweden. That's the next step, is to look at it over time. And I guess what we're expecting to see is for men, you know, maybe you remember that sort of erratic pattern I showed you. Maybe that has something to do with homicides. So yeah, I mean that's a prediction we could make. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. But that doesn't explain. I mean, we've you know, homicide rates have been declining in the U.S. So that doesn't explain. I don't know if you remember the graph. It's been, for men especially, it's been standard deviation has been going up. The variance has been going up since 2000. So that doesn't explain that.
Yeah.
It could explain. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, you mean the original? Way back? There. Is that what you're looking for?
Because that's not number of that. And I was just wondering whether it might have been looking different if you would use age-specific death rates. Because if we're talking about variance, it may be affected by the age structure.
But I mean, in order to get this number of deaths, you use age-specific death rates. And that's sort of where this comes from. So, yeah, I mean, it's a life table. These are life table deaths. So, yeah, it's embedded in the...
Conditional
yeah.
age.
That's right. Yeah, that's how you get these estimates of number of deaths. It's from age-specific rates. That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
But if you think that migration waves be influenced in this kind of roughly, so when I mean a generation of labor market workers, maybe they bring up.
So you're saying, are you talking about clear at the end where I talked about?
Yeah, the last one. No.
This one?
No.
Oh, way at the end? Okay,
wait.
It's got to be a quicker way to do this. Yeah, there. Is that what you want? That's not it?
Where before.
Oh, this?
This one, yeah.
Oh, wait. This is a postscript, yeah. P.S., okay.
So my question is, could a migration wave bring up to the rate, bring down?
I suppose it could. I know that's not... No, not in this. But, I mean, how would you... This is the U.S. versus Sweden. So you've got this strange thing where U.S. males are more likely to die of accidents other than traffic accidents, either suicide or something like falls. American men are more likely to die below age 60, but Swedish men are more likely to die of these accidents, these sorts of accidents, after age 80. And so you're saying migration might have something to... I mean, I don't know. You'd have to come up with a story.
Just because, for example, migration labor market in Switzerland, for example, during age 70, 60, yeah, years 70, 60, they broke up their death rates.
So the immigrants to Switzerland who were older, the older immigrants to Switzerland,
yeah,
died more than the general population there.
Well.
Right, but here you'd have to explain what has to do with accidents. See, I mean, it could. I'm not saying there's not a story, but I mean, that's one of the nice things about this. It narrows it down, and you say, okay, it's because of accidents. So what is it about accidents? Yeah.
Which is, again, a retirement age, so I don't know if that might be more related to maybe manual labor market or
Industry.
Yeah, it very well could be. And the point is that by doing it this way, you can kind of at least know what the alternative explanations are instead of just, you know, you kind of know where to look.
So coming back to the questions, first question I had was, how do we think about the allocation effect apart, you know, as different from the overall cost-specific contribution to the variance? So I think if I understand you correctly, what you're saying is that you have the cost-specific contribution to the variance, subtract the spread effect, subtract the timing effect, and joint effect. What remains is the allocation effect. So it's as a residual category.
You could think of any of them as being a residual category. Yeah.
The question really is, I mean, it's obviously important to think about cost-specific contribution to death. You know, as you say, homicide, traffic accidents seems particularly eye-catching in this data set. So, it's, you know, it kind of points to a problem, and we can start thinking about, for example, you know, other causes, and you know, look at distribution, and then there are interesting discussions about what might contribute to that pattern.
Right.
But. I just want to know a little bit. I mean, can you give a story, an example whereby thinking about spread and timing effect, which you know substantively is, you point to a problem that you know, for this particular cause, spread effect is really interesting, and the policy implication is like that. Can you talk it?
Let me see if I can. Get back to my table here. Any of those tables, I guess, will do.
So I guess you want to talk about heart disease or cancer where the spread effect is bigger, where compared with the allocation effect for this traffic and homicide.
Yeah, I mean, just even descriptively, you would say that if the mortality regimes in the U.S. and Sweden were the same on everything, except the vulnerability, differences in vulnerability to heart disease, death by heart disease over a wider age span in the U.S. Yeah. That alone accounts for about 1/4 of the difference in variance.
Mm-hmm.
It's related to your question. I think looking at the two biggest killers, heart disease and cancer, if you look at the ratio of the overall and contribution and the spread, so the spread for cancer seems surprisingly low, right?
Yes.
And is there a story why that is the case? And does one could, for instance, be that cancers are the type of death that we can diagnose quite well, and maybe these two countries invest a lot in early diagnosis, don't differ too much once you're diagnosed, what your mortality rates are.
I think it means this. It says that the spread in when cancer happened in Sweden and America is more similar to each other. Therefore, it contributes relatively small to the overall contribution of, in the variance of the two countries. Whereas heart disease in Sweden and America, you know, one is really more unpredictable than the other. You know, in Sweden, people have heart disease at more restricted range, whereas in America, it's more spread out.
They die of it.
They die of it, yeah.
And so the issue could be that people could get it at the same time. The timing of when you get it could be similar. For cancer, it's maybe more detectable, or the systems are more geared to early diagnosis, and therefore the spread at age of death between the two countries isn't that large. And so it's both when you get it and what happens to you once you know it that can affect these big differences.
I would think doctors would actually like this result, because it's saying that when it comes to that, we compared to Sweden, we're not. In terms of treating cancer, we're not doing too badly. Heart disease, which has a lot to do with exercise and so forth, so you can sort of blame the victim. You know, you say, well, that's not our fault.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
Was it the case that more Americans died as a result of home improvements than guns? And in which case, is it just a policy issue about gun control or about IKEA? Because I envisage a lot of Americans dying in terrible home improvement accidents, having seen that TV series Home Improvement.
Okay.
Power tools, whereas IKEA, you can scratch your hands with those little sort of Allen keys, but that's about it. But I can't see the top of the heads of people, but was it the case that more people died in America of accidents other than traffic accidents than homicide? I can't say it.
I don't know. I mean, there's no category called death due to home improvement accidents.
I just wonder if IKEA might be the solution.
I don't know.
So, very short one.
So I was just wondering, compared to what you were saying earlier, so if allocation effect is the residual once you've taken care of spread effects and timing effects, if everything that's left goes into allocation, then how do you explain the joint effect? Isn't that also the residual in a sense?
We need to look at the formula a little bit more careful before.
We didn't really go through the formula.
Yeah.
But yeah, and you see, and actually, I would sort of complain about calling allocation a residual effect. Any of them, they're all residual in the sense that, you know, you can identify, if you know. You know, there's one equation with four. If you know three of the unknowns and there's one equation, there's a fourth. You can make any of them the unknown, right? So, you know, you could say the spread affects the, you know. So.
Very good. Thanks, Glenn, for a very interesting talk. Next Monday, Inika Maas from Utrecht University will be talking about social mobility during industrialization. So a bit of history, and which should be interesting. And on Wednesday is in that field some experimental studies.
Daniel Stegmuller will talk about the microdynamics of redistribution preferences. So I'm not sure if it's based on experimental work, but it's based on preferences for redistribution. So redistribution of money, I guess, but not completely irrelevant.
So before we disperse, let's thank.